Hello again and welcome to another episode of BitNote. We'll be playing some great video game music and talking about the games that the music itself is from. Hope you enjoy. So whenever the show starts, I always try to think, you know, what piece of video game music do I like? What music would I like to play and put on the show and have all my great, loyal, brilliant listeners out there listen to? And this week I was thinking, you know, I've got some music from this game and that game, but then one theme struck into my mind and I thought, this is great. There's just one minor thing about it. It's from a game that hasn't actually been released yet. This is something that's going to become a lot more common probably in the future. In fact, it's already pretty common. In the old days of video games, you'd be lucky just to get a magazine screenshot and an article from a greatly recently purchased video game magazine to know about upcoming games, and even then most of the time you just went into the video game shop and just bought them. But these days, especially with the internet, we've been closer and closer to the developers, and you've got a game like Minecraft which is available for people to play like months before it was even fully, finally, and officially released. But that's a whole different story. The simple fact is that recently I backed a project on Kickstarter. Now, you may know Kickstarter, I've mentioned from a lot of other things and a lot of its publicity, but like other crowdfunding sites like Indiegogo, the entire point is that you pledge money to a game to fund it before it eventually takes off. Now, the question arises, why would you actually fund a game that hasn't actually been released yet? And the answer is a couple of reasons. You nearly always get a copy of the game when it's finally released once you donate enough, and of course you get a lot of extra goodies. The more goodies you get depends on how high a tier level you get. You might get more access to the game or nice little features or cool little merchandise. I've got a section in my cupboard now that seems to be devoted from t-shirts that I obtained from pledging on Kickstarter projects. But the whole main thing is, and in my view at least, is that you're supporting a game. You're saying, me as a gamer, as someone who likes games and this and that, I think that this game should be brought into existence. And while I could cheerlead and talk about it on my friends at internet forums and just tell everyone about the game, which would support them, I am showing my respect and support by my hard-earned money. And that's pretty powerful, because money talks. Money is practically the reason that a huge amount of video games get developed. I mean, while there are many cases where a developer will raise the funds by themselves, often they'll just go to publishers, and the publishers will say, you know, we think this is successful, but we're going to put a lot of money into it. So they ask to do this and that, and then publishers suddenly are asked to make many changes. But it gets worse than that, because then they have to actually change the game before it's finally released to the publishers. And then, of course, sometimes the publishers just don't know what'll actually sell a good game. I mean, I'm not saying that they're stupid, publishers are, but they can just be completely out of touch with the market that they're supposed to be funding games for. Sometimes even they can be, but they're still not sure. So they tend to say, well, let's fund games that are kind of like similar to what we know are successful to be safe, which is all right. But if you look at the history of video games, some of the best, highest selling games and the ones that have truly changed things and been great experiences and that have ushered in a new wave, they've all been things that were revolutionary in some way or did things that never had been done before. When Will Wright, back at the end of the 80s, first came up with his idea about a game where you build a city, I mean, publishers thought it was idiocy. I mean, you know, people want to shoot stuff and shoot aliens and stuff. They don't want to, like, build cities. That's barely even a game, which is actually even an entire debate in itself. And Will Wright was, you know, I think I'd be interested in this. I think it's fun. And so, now, fortunately, back then, you could make a major game just by yourself. If you had enough money, you could fund yourself and just had on your own time. And he made the game. And it just had a revolution. I mean, aside from the fact that SimCity is one of the most popular gaming franchises out there, it also started up the whole genre of simulation, of trying to create and play this complex system which people try to manage and control and enjoy and get an understanding of. I mean, you know, the game industry would be in a completely different place without SimCity. We wouldn't have learned, it wouldn't have shown how games could be so much about planning and examination and using long-term strategies. And in this case, just simply building a city and then having a tornado wreck it. I mean, there was a whole menu of disasters in SimCity. You had to try them all at some stage. But the point is, Like I said, that's one of the whole problems with just making stuff that's just similar to stuff that's already popular and things have gone before. You miss out on so many opportunities. Now, I'm not saying that Kickstarter is going to completely revolutionize things. I mean, for one, or crowdfunding sites in general. I mean, for one thing, a lot of them tends to be more reviving old genres that were classic as well. But I mean, you're at least that were popular. But at least you're getting more people who are actually relevant, who actually like video games, to on board to try to experiment effectively, and to have an actual say in what games get developed. So this is all bringing me back to one such game that a lot of gamers got together on this crowdfunding site, pledged money, and managed to get it over the limit and really helped with its development. The game was being developed anyway. In fact, it originally started life as a Sonic the Hedgehog fan game. But the creator pushed to, make more original characters and really make it a game that stood on itself. Now, I played a demo a while back and I found it was fun and bright and colorful and I enjoyed where it was going. And so then when I found out that the creator was having a Kickstarter to help development with it, I pledged my money and managed to get a few rewards. And one of those rewards, among with some art, was a bunch of the earlier bit of the soundtrack for the video game. And I turned it on and I listened to it and I just really liked it. There's a lot of couple of different themes, but one I like, and probably the longest one of the one I've got so far, is City Center Groove, I think from the Mahjong theme. And it is by Leela Wilson, aka Woofle. And as I've said, it's from the upcoming Freedom Planet video game by Galaxy Trail Games. So I started listening to it a fair bit, and like I said, I liked it, and at one stage it even got a little stuck in my head, but I don't want to talk too much about the game right now because it's not come out yet, and I don't want to get a game too hyped up. But I think it's perfectly cool if I just play this song now and talk more about the game when it comes out. Hope you enjoy! Gotta like that theme. It'll be fun playing it when the actual full game comes out and I'll actually play it as the level is going on in the background. But just a reminder, that's from the upcoming Freedom Planet by Galaxy Trail Games, and that music was composed by Lila Wilson, aka Woofle, and was called City Center Groove Mahjong Theme. Alright, on to another game that actually has been released, and I have actually played. I know, breaking from the forum already. Here's its intro theme. Dare you enter the cave? That's what this music is from, The Cave, a video game. And you probably want to enter it, because otherwise you've just wasted €15 and not playing the game. But what you've just heard is The Cave, and it is from Double Fine Productions, but what keeps getting everyone's attention was that it was partially developed by Ron Gilbert. There's this whole trend in the game industry to somehow, you know, revolve or super focus on the careers of certain people. In fact, recently I saw someone reference this old 2001 article that began, "There's a tendency among the press to attribute the creation of a game to a single person, says Warren Spector, creator of Thief and Deus Ex." Yeah. But to move back to the game that it's from, Ron Gilbert, of course, was one of the creators of Monkey Island, a classic series of adventure games. And another guy who was one of the co-creators of it was Tim Schafer. Then, many, many years later, Tim Schafer went off and formed Double Fine Productions, their own video game development studio. And then at one stage, guess who they hire but Ron Gilbert, and with them, they make The Cave. So obviously there's a lot of, you know, hype about the game. I'm going to skip most of the hype because, truthfully, I never really idolized either of these guys. Monkey Island is a great series of games, and both of them have made their own games in their own way. It's just, I don't know, I mean, just because a gamer doesn't mean that I have to utterly respect every... Look, let's just talk about the game because, really, you know people through their work, so I think I'll let you all judge. The Cave is kind of a fun little game. The idea is that there are seven characters. Each of them has something that they, quote, desire the most. And in order to get it, they will enter the cave. And yes, the cave actually introduces himself. It all helps the narrative. Long story short, it's a bit of a mishmash of genres. Not so much like game genres. It's the game genre is pretty much puzzle, platformer, with a bit of storytelling thrown in. But each of those seven characters is a completely different archetype. There's a knight who's looking for a great sword that'll give him power, such as Excalibur. There's a pair of twins that just look very, very creepy and appear to be from Victorian London. And then you've got the hillbilly who, you know... And then you've got the adventurer, a lass who was willing to brave the greatest and most dangerous tombs to bring great treasure. And then they had the scientist who used all this power, and a time traveler as well. And I think I picked the time traveler boat first because, damn, she was able to mildly hover and ward these glowy bracelets, because everyone knows things are glowy in the future, and I wouldn't want them to be any other way. But to cut a long story short, you've got a great big diverse cast of characters, and for each playthrough of the game, you pick three of them and bring them through the cave. So starting out, you just seem to deal with the cave itself. You get down to the entrance of the cave, and then you see the gift shop and the guy who's talking about it. But it's kind of some of the sort of bit of sense of humor of the game. But there are a couple of the parts of the game you have to navigate yourself and, you know, use puzzle solving, and each character has their own special skill, so depending on which characters you go, you might have slightly different options in how you solve the problem. But then there will be three sections of the cave where each section is tailored specifically towards one of your characters. And this will be the section where the character tries to get exactly what they want, the thing they desire the most. And it's different from each character. And this is kind of the real charm of the game, I think. Because, I mean, like, the game is animated beautifully. It's got a really nice, lush sort of, like, visuals. It's kind of got, you know, the 3D things. All the characters have these really nice animations and just a lot of personality in them, and, like, the way they express themselves and just move around. They don't speak, unfortunately, but... And it's when they get into their own specific section, I think the real life of the game comes up. Because usually the character will find themselves in some scenario that the cave, through its mystical properties, has recreated like a real outdoor world that corresponds to the thing that they want. You know, for instance, the children, the twins, they suddenly find themselves in the Victorian home with their mother and father, who won't let them go out to play, yet they want to go out. And the time traveler will find themselves, you know, in a place with a time machine. And when travels to the future, she finds the museum she works in, along with her employee, who is annoyingly one, you know, greatest employee of all time, and she wants to do something about it. So, and of course, the knight, he goes back to a, you know, sort of like this old medieval times with a dragon and a princess. So they've all got their own, like, you know, and of course the adventurer, she finds herself in great Egyptian tomb. So they find themselves in these scenarios where they try to get that thing that they desire the most. And it involves a lot of running around and jumping and also picking up items, then being able to use those items in the right place, which isn't... Not, the puzzle solving isn't too technical or anything, but as they go through and navigate things, you know, a whole little storyline plays up, which is always kind of interesting. Like, the hillbilly is this thing about going around the carnival and trying to attract get a gift so that he can impress the two-legged lady. Yes, that's part of the whole thing of the game. And the monk wants to seek the master, so he becomes the master. So they've all got these really lushly detailed areas that kind of correspond to what the character wants, and they jump around, and often you have to switch between the three characters to puzzle solve, and in the end you're gradually moving that little story forward to accomplish whatever it is that you to accomplish what it is that the character wants. Now, it's a small little vignette. Each of the individual stories on their own aren't really too long, but you get seven of them, which builds up over time, and it's just got a nice... I just really kind of like the personality to the whole thing. I like the tiny little storylines. I like the fact that there's a sense of humor. And usually at some point your character will end up doing something that is so dark and so reprehensible, you will question whether the character really should have gone after what they desired the most in the first place. But I'll leave that to you. If you want to play it, you'll try to find that out. I don't like spoiling games too much, but that's kind of the hint. The game's a little more darker than its cartoony and surrealist things give it credit for. Although, I think by the end of the game, you get to get a choice that'll symbolically represent whether your character accepts or rejects what they had to do to get the object that they desired the most. You also get these animated stills that depict their path, and they change depending on which final decision you made the character choose. Of course, since there are two different endings for each character, and you can only get them both by playing through the game entirely again, I just got one ending for each character, which I felt was the best, and then I looked up the rest of the endings on YouTube. Yes, I know, not quite the thing, but sue me, I played the game enough. So, the music I just played there from the game was the main theme, and it was composed by Brian Min. However, when I bought the soundtrack to this game, I discovered that it actually had a couple of bonus tracks, not just music that was in the game itself. There were a couple of, you know, deleted scene sort of tracks, deleted tracks. But there was also one called Time Traveler Remix featuring DJ Cam. So apparently it's a remix of the Time Traveler theme tune, which of course was originally composed by Brian Min. Only the person who seems to have a hand in this also seems to be Camden Stoddart, who was the audio director for this entire game. So I thought I'd play that instead. You know, normally I play music from the game itself, but I figure, you know, if they spend some extra time and effort coming to this whole new remix of one of the game's themes, I think it's worth listening to. So, have a listen to Time Traveler Remix featuring DJ Cam, and this and the last track, of course, by From the Cave by Double Fine Productions. So, it's kind of nice when the developers remix the music from their own games before the game is even released. And there you have it. So, like I said, that was from The Cave by Double Fine Games. So, our last track of the day will be something from something that we've already played before. Microsoft Windows. Remember just a few shows ago where I played OneStop.mid? Well, there's another pretty well-known mid that was also on Microsoft Windows. It appeared on the Windows operating systems earlier and also seems to have left earlier because while OneStop.mid can still be found even in the latest Windows operating system, this one unfortunately can't. It is called Canyon.mid, but it actually has a full title. It is called Trip Through the Grand Canyon. And it is composed by George Stone of Passport Designs. Apparently, Passport Designs was this company that specialized in the MIDI file format, and as part of their deal when they were going bankrupt, they gave that file over to Microsoft, who has put it into several versions of Microsoft Windows. Possibly also for the same reasons has OneStop.mid, possibly as a test, possibly just to try it out. But whatever way you put it, George Stone has created some more good MIDI goodness with a nice bouncy tune, and it's also a little less schizophrenic than OneStop.mid, which, if you recall, just carelessly careened through several different genres of music and then came to a what we hope was a satisfying conclusion. George Stone was actually a little disappointed that his track wasn't actually credited on the on the MIDI file when it was shipped with Microsoft Windows. He tried to actually pursue action against this, or consider it at least, but of course it was the old problem. He worked for a company, therefore the company owned the song, and when the company gave it to Microsoft, there wasn't much he could do. The track apparently also appears in a game called Chips Challenge, although not quite intentionally. The program just apparently it's a game that and it that's came out on multiple different platforms, such as the Atari and the Amiga and the Spectrum. Yes, I know it's an Amiga game I haven't played, but when it came out on Microsoft Windows, it searched on the computer, and if it found the file, it would actually the Canyon.mid, it would play it at certain times. So it's kind of nice to have a game that's like adaptive that says, "Hey, does this op? You know, normally games just check to see does this have the right hardware requirements? Is this fast enough? Can it run shading?" This was a game that said, "Does this computer have a song that I think that user would like listening to?" So it's kind of fun as it does that. Actually, games that actually play songs is a whole area of itself where they actually make the game par song part of the gameplay, but we'll talk about it some other time. Just as I did with OneStop.mid, what you're hearing now is played directly from Windows Media Player, the latest version, so you'll have it in its full authenticity. And once again, we're playing MIDI file format, which, as I said, isn't so much instruments, it's a set of instructions that whatever the MIDI player must interpret. But I'll leave you with that this song for now. This once again was "Trip Through the Grand Canyon" by George Stone. I hope you're glad that you're getting credited now. And with that, I will leave you. This has been David Collins with the BitNote. Thank you for listening.